Well, we've got a take three. Hello and welcome. This is
such value.
We're moving towards hiring take six, our a cappella gospel sextet from America, who sang, by the way, because I played them the other day
on Great Drive Time Show.
Yes, they did the backing vocals for Don Henley's New York Minute. So there's a long fade out where it goes, ooh, New York Minute, like that. That's them.
How's it go?
Ooh. I could be in an a cappella gospel sextet with a voice like that, don't you think?
I imagine the agents are beating down the door even now.
Anyway, that's for take six. We haven't got there yet. We're halfway there. This is take three for a conversation about Top Gun Maverick. Mark and Simon spoil everything. You've asked for it to be separate from take two, so here it is. If you don't like it, it's your fault because you asked for it. David Myers in Nottingham. After viewing Top Gun Maverick twice now, it's pretty much flawless as far as big blockbusters go. Hmm. However, I have found one glaring fault with it.
Okay.
And then he says no spoilers here, but that's the whole point.
Yeah, spoil.
Towards the beginning of the film.
Spoil.
Towards the beginning of the film? Presumably at the beginning of the film.
At the beginning, near the beginning.
Because towards the beginning.
Is the foyer.
Yes.
That's when you're outside.
I'm now sitting down.
Can I just say, if you're going to pick a plot hole in something that happened before the film started, I think you're being over picky.
Anyway, David says, towards the beginning of the film, when Maverick is doing a bit of MOT on his classic Mustang plane, IMDb tells me, it is actually Tom Cruise's own plane.
That doesn't surprise me.
He's working in what can only be described as a pristine white shirt. He then proceeds to get oil all over it before then changing it, no washing or shower, for another one. Who on earth does mechanical or any sort of DIY in a white T-shirt, let alone a brand new white T-shirt?
Tom does.
I use my late father's old Rolls-Royce overalls, even though they're slightly too small for me.
Can I give you a practical answer to that question?
Yes.
When I first went to Los Angeles mm-hmm. in 1988 or something, and I was staying with Tim Polcat, and we had a band together that we were going to start. We were going to rule the world, but didn't happen. But one of the things that happened was Tim took me to a supermarket, and he said, "You see this?" And I said, "What is it?" He said, "That's a packet of white T-shirts." And I said, "Okay, what's the point?" He said, "Look how much it costs. Like $5, and there are five of them." And I said, "Okay, well," he said, "like, you don't wash them. You literally wear them and throw them away."
Jack Reacher style.
Of course, disastrous, terrible for the economy, terrible for the planet.
Also probably made by slave labor.
Exactly. It was 1988. None of these things occurred to me. But America is the kind of country in which people would do that in a white T-shirt, because you know what? There are five more of them.
Yeah, that's true. But I suspect Tom probably just has them made hand-stitched by highly paid, very clever, talented weavers and sewers and tailors, in fact. Anyway, but it's an interesting point, David. No, thank you very much. So I know that you think it is better than the original.
It is.
Question. Mm-hmm. Goose.
Who gets cooked.
Has a child.
Yes.
With Meg Ryan.
Yeah.
Who is Miles Teller.
Miles Teller.
Who came in.
Not in real life, incidentally. Miles Teller isn't actually.
No.
Meg Ryan's.
So it's very, very good casting.
Yeah.
But he's too young.
Why is he too young?
Well, he would need to be, because he sits on a piano.
Yes. In the original one.
Which is 1986.
86.
So that's 36 years ago.
Yeah.
So he's got to be 36.
Well, 38, because he's not nil when he's sitting on the piano.
No, that's okay. So he's nearly in his 40s. So?
How old's Miles Teller?
Well, his character looks like 25.
Well, hang on. Should we just solve this once and for all? Hold on. He's 35. It's not far. I mean, you're complaining about the fact that Miles Teller is 5 years.
No, I'm just thinking. That whole feel is that Miles Teller's character is not pushing 40, that's all.
Well, I think it's a movie in which youth is anything below 50, frankly. Because everyone says, oh, you know, it's about aging. And you go, well, firstly, when you look at Tom Cruise, it's not about aging, it's about not aging. And secondly, generationally, that makes sense because Tom Cruise is 59.
He is. He's 60 next month.
So it'd be perfectly possible for somebody's child to be in their late 30s. I think it's fine.
You think it's okay? Okay.
It doesn't trouble me. And as I said, Miles Teller is 35 years old. So
you know, that's the only scene where...
And bear in mind, the film should have been out 2 years ago, shouldn't it?
That is true. Much delayed. The only scene where Tom Cruise looks his age is that scene after he crashes the plane, right at the towards the beginning.
The scene that's ripped off of The Right Stuff, and then he goes into the bar, which is absolutely ripped off of The Right Stuff.
Right, and then he says,
"Where am I?
Where am I?"
And the kid says, "Earth," which is a fantastic joke, which you don't want to spoil in a review because it is such a good joke.
It's like the best joke.
It's the best joke in the
film.
Don't
you think, but actually, Tom, he actually goes, "Oh yes, you look and you because he's like covered in plaster and muck."
Yeah.
You go, "Oh, at least he looks his age in that one."
Yeah, but then he has a wash, and then he takes his white T-shirt off, and you go, "Oh."
Well, I look like that if I've taken off my white T-shirt, don't you?
I don't really. The good Lady Ceramicist must be very pleased with her choice.
Val Kilmer. The Val Kilmer scene. Tell me what you thought of that. Because some people thought it was a bit clunky. Other people have found it profoundly moving.
I actually found it moving. I confess that I had heard about it in advance and was sort of suspicious of it, therefore, because of the way it had been kind of pitched. But I thought it was rather well done. And the reason it was rather well done is because they underplayed it. It would have been very easy for them to have gone completely the other way, but they underplayed it. And of course, you know, as we have said before, there's a thing about transmitting information non-verbally, which of course, for very good reason, is part of that key scene, the fact that he's, you know, tapping things out on a... I thought it was interestingly done, and I thought it was moving. I did find it moving, yeah. How about you?
Yes, and Val Kilmer's had his cancer issues as well, so I wasn't quite sure. But at the time, I thought, I'm not sure this is entirely right. But
okay, because...
But I don't know, it just didn't feel as though it was... Correct. It just sort of brought me out of the moment. But I think actually having thought about it and also having read more about Val Kilmer's cancer, then I thought, okay, it's just nicely done.
Yes. And I also, and as far as I understand from the story, Tom Cruise was the person who was insistent that would happen. And no, it felt right. It felt absolutely right. I mean, I don't have a great affection for the first film, but I felt like it was an earned moment. Can we talk about how fabulous Jennifer Connelly is?
Yes, let's do that.
Isn't Jennifer Connelly fabulous?
She is.
It's an underwritten role, but she makes something of it. There are so many films in which Jennifer Connelly... I mean, remember Noah, the mad Noah film?
Oh, that, yes.
Russell Crowe strutting around, you know, being with all the animals. The emotional heart of Noah is Jennifer Connelly's character, because she's the one who sees that he's going mad. She's the one who sees, you know, amidst the you mentioned Nephilim earlier on, the rocks and the stuff and the God and the floods and the Anthony Hopkins hiding in a cave and all that stuff. She's the one who actually sees the human heart of the story. And so often she does that thing of just managing to encompass the emotional center of something which is going off in many different directions. And the very fact that a role which essentially is there to fill a gap in the story, because it is, I mean, the role that the function that her character serves is a polyfiller role. And yet somehow she manages to make it three-dimensional. And I think she does that because she's brilliant.
In Top Gun, there's a mention of her as some former fling of Maverick, and there's a reference to the daughter of the Admiral. So that's her.
Okay.
Progress then, that it's actually not a 25-year-old.
Yes.
You think, okay, this is this is a believable relationship.
Yes, this is a believable relationship. They are of comparable years. I mean, incidentally, neither of them look like they're of the years that they are. They both look absolutely fantastic. But hey, it's a movie. It's a blockbuster movie. One of the things, again, to refer back to Real Britannia. There's a thing in Real Britannia in which they're talking about, you know, social realism and kitchen sink dramas and all that kind of stuff, and saying, and then people discovered that it may well be that people whose lives revolve around kitchen sinks and quite miserable jobs actually don't want to watch that on screen. What they want to watch is James Bond.
Yes.
You know.
And the beach football scene, I mean, it is true that if you and I played beach football, we also look like that.
Yes.
Was that fun for you?
Well, I just thought the film was having fun with kind of, look at this. Look, I mean, there is something unusual about just how good Tom Cruise looks. You interviewed Richard Gere, right?
I have done, yes.
Richard Gere has gone Silver Fox in a way that's perfectly fabulous.
Yeah, that's great.
I love Richard Gere. Yeah. Tom Cruise hasn't.
Well, we don't know that. Let's assume that he hasn't.
I told you that I said that thing to Jason Isaacs. I said, Jason, do you dye your hair? Have you ever told you this?
No.
And he said, no, they dye it for me.
Very good.
She's very good.
I realised as I was claiming that we could both play beach football, as I was talking to you, I was putting my hand in the small of my back
because
my back hurts. And I was just, and we're sitting on very lovely chairs for people with bad backs. Just thinking at this point, I don't think I'd be that good on that. I could keep score.
Yeah. I couldn't play beach football because I weigh 17 and a half stone.
Do you really? I would have thought you were like a 12 and a half, 13.
No.
Okay.
I carry it
heavy
well.
Bones.
You yeah, absolutely, heavy bones.
Absolutely do. Does it matter that we don't know the... I think it's a bit of a cop-out that they obviously deliberately don't mention the state that they're attacking because...
It's not a cop-out. It's a deliberate thing.
I know. But you're in that... When they're doing the briefing and they're saying, this is what we've got to do, obviously... One of the pilots is going to go, and where is it? Where is this? But, you know, and I know it, most, sometimes in TV shows, movies, they make up a country.
Yeah, that's right. Fredonia.
Yes, or one of those. Flabidusa.
Where do they go to in Team America World Police? It says the terrorists are hiding in Bakadakalaka Street. And
it's one of those. You know. It's one of those. My guess is it's Iran because they're talking about a nuclear weapons site.
Talking about plutonium enrichment plant.
Yes, and there's a lot of concern about Iran getting nuclear weapons and whether they're going to use their bits and pieces, as I think it's officially referred to, for nuclear power, or whether they're going to use it for a bomb. So is there any other country that's about to go nuclear? I think it must be Iran.
I think it's a fictional country in a fictional story, and it doesn't matter. Why does it matter?
Because at that moment, it took me out of the film because I'm thinking, well, at least pretend, at least give me some, where are you attacking? It just makes no sense.
No, it makes
everything is done with precision. Everything is done right down to the.
But it makes as much sense as everything else, which is that you simply don't name the country. You go because it's a cartoon. It exists in a cartoony world, and this is why the whole thing about military and the American military.
What is the heart of that criticism that you're ridiculing just by the tone of voice?
Politically, the films about the American military, and they're being bad, and you don't think that they're being bad.
Oh, this is because you were criticised by a socialist website.
I don't know what the website is. It's something somebody sent it to me. It was a thing that you know of, but let's not give them the oxygen of publicity.
Okay. No,
but,
exactly right.
It was, you know, this has been kind of flagged up as sort of like, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. Shall I let you into something?
Let me into it. Mm.
It's a film. Oh, it's not real.
It's also a very good film. Yeah. Ron in Hackney. Dear False Crisis and False Dawn, Top Gun Maverick's flight sequences were not only spectacularly filmed, they were coherent and comprehensible in a way very few big...
Narratively coherent dogfights.
Yes. Which the first film did not have.
No.
Absolutely did not have.
It had a lot of Kenny Loggins, but not much else.
Unless you knew inherently and instinctively the difference between the American fighters and the Russian fighters, nobody else had a clue. Ron continues, I realised they learned how to do this from heist films. As with a heist film, they explain the objective, enumerate the dangers, describe the plan, and then practice it repeatedly. Yes, they even have to blow the doors off.
May I suggest that the writer of this email,
who hasn't finished,
has perhaps stumbled upon the secrets of cinema on heist films.
Ah. Ron continues, it ends as a heist film in reverse. After something inevitably goes wrong in the heisty bit, the fallout repairs the previously broken relationship between the main characters rather than destroying it. Although maybe having Maverick and Rooster's escape devolve into suspicion, betrayal, heartbreak and murder will be in the director's cut. Thanks for wittering on.
And here's
Ron
the best
and
thing, it won't. The best thing is, it won't. There isn't a director's cut with a darker thing because it is the film that it is.
And Tom would not have let anything because you just know that he is in control of the whole thing.
He would have gone into the room. He would have smiled and laughed in that strange, out-of-context way that he does. And everyone would have just gone.
Yeah, but Ron, thank you very much for highlighting that again. The fact that you can understand the dogfights, which are by their very nature confusing.
And I will take you back again, once again, to that academic paper that I saw, which was talking about Top Gun as a musical with planes rather than dancers. And choreography, the choreography of dance, which I think is the highest art form, largely because I don't understand it. There is something about physical choreography that is understood by the makers of Top Gun Maverick.
And that concludes take three. I think we need to get to take four at some stage, but at the moment we're stopping at take three.
But Simon, why didn't you address all those issues about the politics of the... Why didn't you? Why didn't you, Simon?
Because Mark and Simon spoil everything, and I've also spoilt that line of attack.
Fascist.
Tory.